And welcome back in Stripe Show Podcast. Thanks for making us part of your day. 120th plan, United States Open Championship in the books up there, Westchester County, Wingfoot Golf Course. The West Course, there's actually two courses there. There's a West and an East, both of them championship material. The West Course on full display, tough test. Guys were battling it out, and Bryson DeChambeau, well, he just kind of bullied his way through, minus six. Wins by six, and the only guy on Sunday that was under par, three under par, next best handful of guys right there at even par. So much to talk about, the fascinating, intriguing person that is Bryson DeChambeau. And I welcome in the host of the Shotgun Start, contributor to Golf Channel Morning Drive, and one of the best golf writers in the game, Brendan Porath. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Travis. Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me on. I don't know if I'm one of the best golf writers, but I am a golf writer.
Yeah, you
are. Occasionally.
So. Yeah, you are. You're one of the best golf personalities. How about that, right?
All three. Yeah, there you
go. It's not just writing. It's TV. Yeah. It's podcast.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, there's a – yeah. People ask me, like, what do I do? It's, there's no real specific thing. So.
Well, we got a lot to talk about here, man.
Yeah.
Six under, the big bad – Wingfoot got pushed around a little bit by the 235-pound linebacker that is Bryson DeChambeau. What'd you make of it?
I thought it was a great U.S. Open. I think, you know, as is tradition now with the U.S. Open, it seems like so much of the oxygen and ink is consumed by the course and the setup. And I guess I need to ask some historian, someone who's, you know, more well-versed in this than I am, when this became, you know, the all-consuming identity of the U.S. Open. When did we determine it had to be even par? When did we determine it had to be thick rough? Or when did we determine it had to be, you know, carnage? I don't think it could not have been that every year, right? Like, yeah, there are years when the players are going to be under par, or there are years when, like in Erin Hills, maybe when it's not necessarily the thick rough right up against the 20-yard fairway. But somehow this has become the microscope and the lens with which we view the U.S. Open. Wingfoot is mint. It's a historic course. It's one that should appropriately be on the U.S. Open rotation. I think what we have coming out of it is we're talking a little bit less about Bryson's play and more about how the style of play that and how different it looked from 06, and how, you know, you've got a course that's supposed to really be deliver a winner that's plus five or even par, whatever it is. It seems like we're talking a lot about where the game is at right now, vis-a-vis Bryson's style of play on this, what is supposed to be style of course, where fairways are supposed to matter. And clearly they did not.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, you know, you've got 23 of 56 fairways hit by Bryson. That's the lowest ever in the U.S. Right. Open. But when you give it context, Bryson, that's 41%. The field average was 39.
Yep.
So, you know, now you've got a guy hitting at 325, 330, and he's hitting more fairways than the field average. That's a huge advantage.
Take even the average out of it. Like, take the best driver, Brendan Todd. Or, you know, I think he was hit the most fairways. Like, that just doesn't matter. That's not that we have strokes gained now to sort of illuminate what matters and what doesn't. And we know, even at a place like Wingfoot, where it's allegedly, you know, the 5-inch rough and the hack out sideways type of rough, it didn't matter. Strokes gained illuminated that. It's hitting it as far as you can. And here this week, especially hitting it so far that you're now at a wedge distance or short iron distance, as opposed to hitting a 5-iron like Hale Irwin or a 2-iron out of rough, that which, you know, you just can't do or you wouldn't do. They hit it 370 into a wedge distance and the rough is kind of nullified. It doesn't matter. And Wingfoot has a bunch of open greens, right? A bunch of, you could run it up there. And so, like, even Bryson was better than field average, but the guy who was like the very best at hitting fairways, it didn't matter. And sort of the strokes gained bear that out. Hitting fairways, just it's about getting it up there as far as possible.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when you're 20 to 35 yards up there further, right, and you're in the rough. Now, granted, the ball's sitting down, but to your point, you can chase it up there. And the fairways were so tight, you know, that it just everybody was having a hard time hitting fairways. So it really panned out and played into the big hitter's hand, which is USGA now. I mean, you look at them now historically, your winners, 2016, Dustin Johnson, Koepka goes 17, 18, Woodland in 19, now Bryson in 20. What's the common denominator there? I mean, you know, these guys, let's hit as far as we can. Let's go find it. And yep. then let's roll the dice. And I think when I look at Bryson and I was making my picks, I like to play DraftKings and I do a show mm-hmm. for them. And, you know, I found myself shying away from Bryson just a little bit because I didn't particularly like the way he was trending in the approach game. And I thought his touch around the greens was, you know, had room for improvement. When you dig deeper with Bryson, the real story here, strokes and approach, just under 7 positive third for the week and short game plus 5 second for the week. Bryson hit his irons extremely well and he found his touch around the greens. And I'll admit, I didn't see it coming into Wingfoot.
Yeah, totally. I think that's, I completely agree with you. And you know, we could talk about people scoffing at his strategy of hitting it as far as possible, but like that was, sure, you can doubt him for that. I don't know if that's right, but he hadn't played great, like you're talking right. about, really since Detroit. He factored at the PGA, but he had been pretty erratic and wild. So I think you're right to doubt him there, not just because, you know, the whole like the old guard scoffing is like, oh, you can't win at Wingfoot without hitting the fairway. Like that was put to rest this week. But in fact, he hadn't been playing his best. I found it fascinating. He talked last night about how he played a practice round. He went around with Phil. I think Phil is quite interested in listening to Bryson almost as much as, you know, normally when a younger player plays with Phil, you're doing a lot of the listening. But Bryson said he took from that, Phil talking about 06, where Phil obviously missed a ton of fairways. And, you know, that was a successful week, whatever. It ended really poorly, and that will be an ignominious moment that goes down in history. But Phil played really well to be there. And Phil told him, like, my short game got me through that entire week. Like, I was fabulous around the green, on the green. And Bryson took that to heart, I think it was Tuesday, and, like, went and practiced more of those short game shots, whether mm-hmm. it's from the rough or the angles into the different bowls or slopes around so many of those greens. Like, he took that to heart. I think you were right to sort of doubt him because the trends hadn't been there, but it all came together this week.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you look at, you know, since COVID, third at yep. the Schwab, eighth at RBC, sixth at the Travelers, first at the Rocket, as you mentioned. And when you look at that stretch, strokes gained off the tee, I mean, he's just crushing people, right? I mean,
right.
We're talking plus 6, plus 7. The approach game's good. Short game still, you know, not great. The touch still was not phenomenal. But then, you know, you get to the fourth at the PGA. He played good there. But then, you know, you get into the playoffs. He missed the cut at the Northern Trust. 50th at the BMW. Putted horrifically at Eastlake, 22nd. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, I'm seeing a decline in strokes gained off the tee. His approach game's not good. His touch is not good. Now, that's one side of it. Then on the other side of it, you play this course where it's like, okay, I can bomb it off the tee. So if I miss fairways, I can still run it up to the front, right? So in a US mm-hmm. Open setup, and he works with Chris Como, who felt very good about this setup for Bryson, I think for a couple of those reasons, and I'm sure there's others, and he putts Poana very well. You know, it's like, okay, this is a good venue for him. So it's like there's two different sides of the coin. And as you know, golf can be, you can find it, right? And you find it in that week. And to your point, you go work on these short game shots. He had some beautiful short game shots. He hit some beautiful approach game shots out of the fairway up to pin high. To me, that's the story. I mean, you know, like, approach, short game, you already know you're getting the distance in the putting with him. Big, big improvement in those two areas. And here he is, 6-shot winner over Matthew Wolf from. And where's this, you know, dislike for Bryson that you can kind of sense and hear that's out there for him?
Look, point blank, there's like a lot of nonsense that comes out mm-hmm. of his mouth. Like he dresses it up in a lot of flowery and vocabulary, that language from vocabulary that maybe like the average sports writer might not understand, and or golf writer or golf, tournament organizer. Like he uses words that are just foreign to a lot of tour pros. You hear it coming out of a lot of tour pros' mouths. So like there's a lot of fluff around him, but like you cannot doubt. So I think that there's some backlash around that. I want to live to be 140 years old. I think I know for a fact other players thought like they're just roll their eyes at him. Like this is ridiculous. But I think like, you cannot doubt his work, right? You cannot doubt the hard work. He's absolutely great for the game. He's great for content, as we say. He's just a fascinating personality, someone the PGA Tour should promote in total, right? In total, right. Like the immaturity, like the tour won't necessarily promote that, but like that is part of what is drawing eyeballs to him. What makes him such a character that's worth spotlighting here. The character in full is how we should be appreciating, understanding Bryson. And some of that bothers us, but you cannot doubt his work despite, the work he dresses up in kind of odd language that seems like, does he really have a grasp of physics, or does he just like throw the words out there that, there's been some people have debunked some things he said, of course, but the work is perceptible, right? He's put on 40 some pounds, 50 some pounds, whereas like a lot of these pros, this isn't to say they don't work as hard, but it's done out of view, right? On the range back home or from, dawn till dusk and all that. We can actually see physically manifest the work that Bryson has put in on his body. And I don't think you can really like hate on that, even as, he uses some things, uses words and says some things and tries to appeal smarter than the other his co-colleagues. It might bother them, but I think like the talent and work, the talent which exists because you don't win an NCAA title, you don't win a US amateur without talent. Like that was there before he got all big and bulky, and all the professional wins before he got all big and bulky. So this is kind of a combination of incredible talent, which you need, and the work that he decided and deliberately changed after an underwhelming run at the majors. He looked out and saw what Brooks, you were talking about, and saw what DJ had done. And it's like, I got to start hitting it farther than even I am right now. He was always in short, but I got to get even bigger and hit it even farther. So while he may bother some people with his rhetoric, I think it's hard to doubt the work and talent.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. You can't argue with what he's done with Chris. He found his right guy in Chris Como. Yeah. And I called Chris right after they started this, right as they came back from COVID, and I could see the difference statistically, and obviously you could physically see the difference in Bryson. And he came on the podcast back in, I think it was July, right after the Rocket Mortgage, or right before, right in that area. And we just kind of talked about what they were doing and how they were doing it. And you could sense from Chris, like, I don't know if he was nervous, but obviously concerned when you start making wholesale changes like this, you're changing your body like this. And I think he really prepared him in that, look, let's leave some breadcrumbs along the way so we can kind of work our way back. But these are wholesale changes. We're talking 30 pounds. I think technically when you look at a swing, you got to look at it probably pretty closely to see some things. He's swinging faster. Where I see the biggest difference, and Chris talked about this, is in the preparation, in the way that he kind of gets his muscles alive and ready to go, and almost like firing himself up to run into the ring of a WWE. Yeah. Yeah. And the work continued Saturday night. Who's last guy on the range, Brendan?
Yeah, and he was doing the work Wednesday night, right? He was like calibrating his wedges was the term he used, just because he wanted to see how they would fly in colder conditions when he would be playing earlier. Isn't he like the perfect person to be this? I don't know if guinea pig's the right term. Like, this is who he is. I'm not sure. It's not just work, but like you mentioned with Chris, there's a level of, you need some courage here, some stones to really make these changes. And so it's work and courage. And Bryson sort of exhibited that from his earliest days, whether it's with the one length irons or it's trying, face on putting, which some people understand as side settle, but was different. And he called it face on, that then became, illegal. Like, he is the person with the stones to really go to, take this to extremes or take these to really outside of the box approaches. I'm not sure many pros who are out there who are making millions of dollars, which Bryson already was, would, I don't know if it's even trust, but just to have the courage to do this in conjunction with Chris and like just overhaul what was already a successful career.
Yeah. Yeah. It's impressive stuff. He's polarizing. He's interesting. He's great for the game. And I think you got to embrace all of it.
Totally.
Let's work down the leaderboard a little bit here.
Okay.
I want to, the first name, obviously, I think we got to talk about is Matthew Wolff, who, you know, for me is now starting to show the consistency in great play, right? We've seen it in spots. He held off Bryson, of course, for his lone win at the 3M Open. And now we see him starting to show up more and more. He played great at the PGA. He was 16th at the BMW, which we know was another very difficult golf course at Olympia Fields. And here he is now, lone second at the U.S. Open. When you look at the young Matthew Wolf, what comes to your mind?
I think he's, you know, a phenom, superstar. He came down to earth a little bit in the fourth round, but not, you know, it wasn't a total implosion of any kind. What comes to mind, I think what I'll take away is that eagle putt he made on 9, right on top of Bryson. And it was similar, I was thinking, to 3M last year, right, where he just bombs in this eagle putt across the green. I thought that was super impressive. He didn't have his best stuff. It was a really, contrary to people, you know, wailing about it, but not being hard enough, Bryson just had like a historic final round. I think it was first guy since Tiger in 2000 to play all four rounds of US Open at par or better. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think we can look at Matthew Wolf and say that was any kind of disappointment.
Let's take a second to talk about the guys and girls over at Encore Golf. Encore has earned a reputation of having the most cutting edge technology in their golf balls that the industry has seen in quite some time. Their team in Buffalo, New York, is changing the script of golf technology through the perimeter weighted designs, use of high density particles, and even a nano transitional layer in their latest creation, which offers players enhanced accuracy and control for every shot on the course and extreme velocity off the tee. They already have their award winning Elixir and Avant 55 golf balls, but the new Vero X1 is the highest performance ball to date. With their full suit of golf balls, they are transforming the game for players of all skill levels. Visit EncoreGolf.com/Travis Fulton for more details about their products that are revolutionizing the game. Now back to the Stripe Show podcast.
I think you make really valid points about both, you know, DeChambeau and Wolf. Like, these are rounded players. These guys,
yeah,
it's not just the distance. You're not looking deep enough. Yes, the distance is an advantage. I mean, there's no question. I mean, we see it. I'm not denying that. But when your strokes gain positive in all of the metrics, that needs to be stated, right? I mean, these are balanced players. You know, Bryson was one of the best in approach game. You know, Bryson was one of the best around the green. Bryson was one of the best with the flat stick. So yeah, Wolf is just checking it off, isn't he? I mean, you get on tour, get comfortable, you know, then get in contention, then win.
Right.
Check, right? Now it's like, okay, now show us some consistency. He's starting to do that. Then get in contention in the major. Check. Now make some putts late on Sunday. Okay. Well, you know, like he's moving. I mean, he's checking all the boxes. And I got to tell you, I love watching him play. And is it just me, or is he not busting it past Bryson as much as Bryson is busting it past him off the tee?
It's pretty close, man. It's like nip and tuck. I think you're right. It's not like Bryson, you know, playing with Brendan Todd or something. Like, right. it's Matthew Wolf is right there with him. And I think, like, we got to remember, it was his first U.S. Open ever.
Yes.
You know, his second major championship. So let's not go crazy here. I think there hadn't been a U.S. Open winner, a rookie U.S. Open winner since like 19, I think it was Francis Ouimet.
Yes.
And so, like, that just doesn't happen. So I think we have to have a little bit of context. Wolf, he seems like a different cat. He's really, like, he's got a little bit of a demeanor to do this and, mm-hmm. you know, at least be in the final group in his very first U.S. Open. I think we kind of forget that a little bit.
He's got the demeanor. These guys are showing up, yeah. Hat on backwards. He's like texting, sure, right before he's teeing off. He's probably like making dinner reservations or something. I mean, it's sure. His, you know, fourth at the PGA, second at the U.S. Open. I mean, come on. I mean, this is incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. I can't overstate what we've seen from Matthew Wolf in the last 3 months. I mean, it has been great stuff. So yeah, it's fun, right? You know, Morikawa right there, same age, of course, wins the PGA, you know, Hovland's not far behind. He's got to shore up the short game, but the kid can strike his golf ball. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So Sungjae Im, he's right there. I was really bummed for Scottie Scheffler, he wasn't able to play. We want to talk about a golf course made for him. A lot of young players. And there's another one that I want to get to here in a second, but I want to throw a few more names at you. Work down the leaderboard here. There's the X-Man. He's getting close. His game obviously built for the U.S. Open. Xander Schauffele finished fifth at +4. DJ kind of ho-hummed it there. T6. Yeah. Get to T6. And, well, let me come back to him. Let's go to T8 here first. There's Rory,
okay.
JT, Finau, Zach. Anybody jump out there for you? I mean, Rory, not his best once again, late in the championship, but JT certainly showed some frustration there down the stretch on the weekend. Finau once again close. A lot of big names up there. Anybody jump out, good or bad, as far as that group?
I mean, Rory had not been playing well. I was surprised with this opening round. Then he looked awful on Friday. I had higher hopes for him on Sunday. I wish, it was gone first hole. Like after the first hole, whatever his finishing number, he says 75 or something. Like, I take less away from that than he was done after the first hole, which was so frustrating about that was kind of what we've seen from Rory at times. Absolutely mash drive, perfect drive down the middle, then an underwhelming to poor chip shot that's short, and then four putts and a double bogey after a perfect drive. And Zach Johnson, who kind of smothered a drive into the rough, comes out with a lower number on the hole. And that was it for Rory. He was already his probability to win was, I think, under 3%. It was long shot. He was going to have to do some like Johnny Miller type stuff. But it was just disappointing to see that right out of the gate. And in the manner, what you'd almost rather him bomb a drive like off the planet and have to scramble and make a double than hit a perfect drive and just kind of kick it coming in. That was disappointing. But I was surprised he played as well as he did, quite honestly, given the way, he's got all sorts of stuff going on in his personal life with the new child and all that. And he hadn't played well since the restart. He seems like he needs fans around. Like, that's a disadvantage to not have fans around backing him. He's a fan favorite, and rightfully so. So I was a little surprised by that he contended, then also disappointed, when he started that way. DJ, I don't know. What can you say? He's player of the year. He's incredibly talented. And, it was like so set up and overwhelming, not overwhelming, but a heavy favorite at the start of the week set up and just didn't really have the form that we saw through the playoffs. The bigger takeaway is like, I don't think anybody was really catching Bryson the way he played on Sunday. Bryson played well through the first three rounds and then played sort of at a different level than everyone else on Sunday. And I don't think it mattered what anyone did.
Yeah, I mean, he was clearly the head and shoulders the best player, especially on the weekend. I mean, he just was the best player on the weekend. DJ finishing at +5, 11 shots back, and then another guy right there with him that I think has to be over the moon right now. And I talked about him last week coming in on this gambling podcast as kind of a sleeper, and that was Will Zalatoris. And, you look at Will and the kind of player that he is on the Korn Ferry Tour. I'm like, look, this guy hits it a long ways and he doesn't spray it. I mean, it's like that travels, give me a good putting week and Will Zalatoris is going to make the cut, and not only make the cut, but he shoots one over on Sunday. Almost had two hole in ones on Thursday. Should have had the one.
Yes.
The second one hit the flag. It should have went in.
He got robbed.
He did. Right. And what a performance. He has to be stoked. I mean, here comes now the next wave of young players. And what do they have in mind? Will Zalatoris hits at 315 off the tee. And he's not that erratic, Brendan. You like Will?
Yeah, love Will. And kind of anybody paying attention should have loved Will coming into this week. He's been, lights out on the Korn Ferry Tour. And I think he just demonstrated it on a really tough major championship setup. He's had the pedigree through college. He, was a great college player, good amateur career. He's worked on his game. I know he's worked with Scott Fawcett on all the sort of strategy stuff, game planning stuff. And the way he's been the putting is the biggest issue, right? The putting can get kind of ghastly at times, right? Because he's so talented everywhere else. The putting would be an issue, but he's demonstrated it on the Korn Ferry Tour this season. And then he just demonstrated it against, you know, in the toughest test in golf, as they call it. What's unfortunate, quite honestly, is that due to COVID, he can't bump it up and do this more at the highest level. You know, I guess he could get the Battlefield promotion, which he might be knocking on the doorstep for. But, you know, this is a player, I think, on the Korn Ferry that, like, his OWGR is, you know, better than a lot of players with their card. And I think Data Golf had something where he's, like, really more of a top 40 player in the world right now. And just because he's not up on the big tour doesn't necessarily mean that he didn't belong there this week. And to see him get around really successfully, it was completely unsurprising. Super exciting talent. Super excited to get him out on the big tour. Maybe he gets that Battlefield promotion. Wish we didn't have to wait, you know, a whole other year.
Yeah, you just kind of get the feeling if he was going into the fall swing, right, on the PGA Tour, that he would just kind of seamlessly get out there and start making cuts and making some money and competing. I mean, his game is going to make the jump. That was a lot of fun. To watch him play so well. You know, I'm now scrolling down the leaderboard, Brendan, and I'm now officially into the missed cut section.
Okay.
And there's two names here. There's Tiger, right? Plus 10. What's your take on Tiger? What are you saying?
I mean, I see a, you know, guy in his 40s, right? Who,
hey, careful with that. You're talking to one here.
No. A guy who's had a back fused and knee surgery and all this stuff. He's in his 40s at this point, and just having him tee it up was kind of a long shot a couple of years ago, right? Just having the ability to play golf or the ability to stand and walk. Tiger's the only guy that we're going to see every single shot of, even when he's not in contention, even when he doesn't have a shot, maybe at the start of the week, but we have to watch it from, you know, the first tee to the 18th hole. And I think it's hard to take any doom and gloom or out of a missed cut. I just do. Like, he hasn't really been that all season. I don't know where the guy was at the Zozo, where that went, which I think, you know, his week at the Zozo was a little bit of a surprise in and of itself, given we hadn't seen him for so long. And last year ended pretty underwhelmingly after his Masters win. This is who he is. It's a little bit of a trick-or-treat scenario. U.S. Open at Wingfoot. He's not the longest player. He's far from the longest player anymore. You know, his back has issues, certainly in a September climate in the Northeast. I didn't really have high hopes for him for those reasons, and the fact that he's not had a great season in whatever, how many starts it was, 5-6 starts. Does that mean this is a disappointment? No, I think it's just the new reality, or it is the reality of Tiger. I don't get high hopes. If we get him contending, I assume it'll be at a Masters or an Open Championship. If we get him contending, it's a bonus. And I think we just need to be happy he's out there. I don't know that it makes watching him that, you know, exciting, but because he's one of the great, you know, one of the GOATs or the GOAT, we're going to see every shot. I just love to see it more on like a Royal Melbourne type, where it's absolutely like just a thrill to watch him at the President's Cup last year. But again, even there, when he's, you know, throwing 100 on the radar gun, like, he had to take a whole day off at the President's Cup. You can't do that in a major championship. So I think it's just got to pick his spots and pick his venues, pick his championships. And I'm not like down on him after this week at all. I think MC was pretty expected.
Yeah. He looked a little slower on Friday, you know, just moving around. To your point, he looked 44, right?
Right.
And with a fused back, and he just kind of looked like he was trying to hold it together and get himself around. And I don't know, felt like a big place to big golf course for him. And, you know, with the sensitivity of the back, he didn't look quite 100% to me on Friday.
What's going on with the putter? I mean, you would know that better than I would. Like, it just seems like the putting has been somewhat of an unexpected tumble this summer, and then it wasn't, you know, ideal again this week.
Yeah. You know, I know Matt Killen was another set of eyes for him on the putter. And I mean, I think when you look at it on the surface, it things haven't really gotten better there. You know, I mean, he's not rolling the ball very well. His distance control is off. I'm sure there's a little bit of erosion in skill as you get older, right? He's not the same player and putter, but boy, it feels a little like there's some search, you know, mm-hmm. right now, mm-hmm. what's going on with the flat stick. And he hasn't found that, you know. Now we go back to the Masters. Of course, he knows a thing or two about Augusta, but right. you know, in November, it's going to be chilly. It could be, I mean, for crying out loud, it could be just wet and cold, you know, I mean,
yeah.
who knows? And that's not going to bode well for him. So you hope for warmer conditions. When we get up there, which is our next two major championships, which is strange to say, both are going to entail a green jacket.
yeah. yeah. What's crazy is like, as expected as, you know, or as unsurprising as the MC this week is, it wouldn't, you know, be surprising to see him contend at the Masters. I know that the climate and the time of year is not going to be benevolent to him, but like, you know, he could have the most horrific stretch of golf going into the Masters. And that is a place he knows how to get around, obviously.
Yeah.
The Augusta National, we saw it. He got through it. You know, sometimes it's a war of attrition type where he's waiting for Francesco to make his mistake. Other times it's like knowing how to hit the best lag putt of anyone in the field, things like that. So, yeah, his game might be in rough shape, but, you know, it wouldn't be surprising again to see him, you know, at least be respectable, if not contend.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, there's horses for courses. There's no question.
Sure.
I mean, Tiger knows a thing or two about Augusta National. I mean, if you had to pick a Tiger, let's pick one course to win your 16th major. Which one's it going to be? I mean, I think mm-hmm. that's probably right. the one. So,
right.
yeah, we'll have to wait and see. There's going to be a lot of rest here in between. And, you know, you hope for warmer conditions. And there's really a couple more names here as I'm just kind of looking through here. I don't know what Justin Rose is doing. That's one guy that I just can't quite put my finger on exactly what he's trying to do with his golf game with through the equipment changes and sure. instruction changes. And I just, you know, he's plus 10, but here's one here for you. I mean, have we just reached the spot of insanity for Jordan Spieth at this point? Misses the cut at plus 14. I mean, the guy's just doing the same thing over and over again. And yet I just keep seeing the same results.
Yeah, this was a venue, a championship that was really going to expose all the issues, right? Like you can kind of maybe put it together with smoke and mirrors at a, I don't know, at a Colonial or something like that, right? Where he was okay and kind of in the mix. It was a bit of a roller coaster, but it, you know, he was in the mix. This exposed him quickly. I don't think, again, it was surprising to see. He is someone who doesn't hide. You know, he's very emotive. Right. He's emotive on the range. He's emotive in the microphone. And I think to his credit, he's very candid about it right now. Like you understand that it is an absolute grind. You understand he comes out and says he's lost. He doesn't know technically what, you know, what the way out is. He just knows it's a grind. Right. There has to be work done. I'm not sure if he had the answers, you know, he would be in a better spot. Now, like it feels like it's, like, at what point do we get do we hit this, you know, reach the tipping point where it's like, all right, it's enough grinding this way or doing it this way. It's been since Royal Birkdale 2017 that it's not looked super uncompetitive, right?
Yeah.
It's so bad. It's all directions. It's off the tee. It's approaching the green. You know, the putter can be fickle from week to week and you can kind of cover up some things with some putting. But like, it's really, really bad from the tee to the green. And it feels like we've hit the tipping point. We maybe should have hit the tipping point a while ago of just, I don't know if it's changing what you're doing, changing who's around you. The fact of the matter is like the best year of his career might've been 2015, early in his career, but
yeah.
like the fact that, and that's fine, but he's like not competitive anymore. Then there's like a big gap between the best year of your career and not being competitive. He's too talented.
Yeah. Oh no, he is. And he still puts together a score, which to me is amazing. Like he still has the genius to score.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unsolvable. I just think he has to start another chapter where, and that chapter begins with the driver off the tee and finding the fairways and then finding more fairways, or I wouldn't even say fairways, just less spray, you know, the miss, tighten up
yeah.
the miss where you're not hitting it 20 yards right on one and then 30 yards left on three. You start tightening up the dispersion off the tee. Now the confidence starts to build and you let Jordan Spieth go to work, right? I mean, he can still score. I don't think he's going to go completely away, but I do think we're reaching a point where I don't feel bad for him. Like it's kind of like you're doing the same thing here. You know, it's like you have to,
yeah.
at some point, you've got to take some ownership here and solve this a different way. So it's going to be interesting to me with Spieth and Tiger. Well, you can take some time off after this little run here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm pumped for the fall. Yeah. You know, like I'm pumped for the Masters, November Masters. It's going to be extremely cool to see. But and I think actually it'll be cool to see some of these, you know, what would normally be the Asian swing kind of in the Western United States doing some prime time. So I don't know that like I'm not going to hibernate here, but this was really sort of a marquee event, obviously. But we'll come down a little bit and then get ramped up for the Masters, some of those West Coast.
Well, here's where we're going to go. We're going Corrales Punta Resort and Club Championship. That's what's this week. Defending champion Graham McDowell. Then we go in October, Sanderson Farms. Then we go Shriners. The CJ Cup will be at Shadow Creek. Then Zozo will be at Sherwood. Bermuda Championship. Then in November, we go Houston and over to Augusta. Is there, last question, a name or two storyline that as you kind of get into the fall, right? And a lot of these big names are going to, you know, kind of shut it down here for a little bit. But is there a name that maybe we're not thinking about or two that you're kind of like, gosh, I'm kind of interested to watch this as we kind of roll through the fall series?
I'm a little interested in Cameron Champ. He's won twice now in the fall. He won Sanderson and Safeway. It seems to be a stretch that's been comfortable for him. Fascinating to see by what he does at the Master. I think Jeff Ogilvy a couple of years joked like he could drive the first green. Champ could drive the first green at Augusta National. I think it's a little tongue in cheek, but maybe he could probably get it up there a little bit if he cuts one, you know, just right. So like I think he's someone, he's in the field. He's someone to watch. He's played, you know, I thought he was pretty impressive. He's up and down, right? He's up and down. He can really go away. It was impressive at the PGA to really see him contend there. Then it was a little ugly there in the playoffs. I'm fascinated to watch him in the fall, like with an eye towards Augusta and just seeing aesthetically what he does to that course and maybe how the members react to what he's doing, what Bryson's doing. Bryson's talking about playing up the 14th fairway when he's in 13th, you know, just crazy stuff. So I'm just fascinated to see how some of these guys, because Champ is just, he's the leading edge of a whole generation that's coming, right? Finau, is there too. They're hitting it this far with control, right? They're not even taking 100% swing. So I'm just fascinated to see those guys as the game evolves.
Yeah, me too. I like Champ. I'm excited to watch Scheffler and as he kind of continues his great play. And the last name for me, give me more Thomas Peters, please. I want Thomas Peters more in the United States. I don't know if that's going to happen. I was really happy to see him play well. I like Thomas Peters. He kind of jumped on the screen for me at the Olympics when he hit it 30 yards past Bubba on the first hole. I was like, who just hit that drive, right? Like, what just happened there? So I like Thomas Peters. I think I'd be interested to watch him more over here. I don't know if it'll happen, but that's the game. All those guys, they can get it out there, and the fall series would be fun. Take some time off though. Don't work too much. This is the time to watch some, this is the time to watch some football and, you know, kind of, and do some other things. Cause we'll get to Augusta soon enough. So Brendan, I can't thank you enough, man, for jumping on the podcast. Check out Brendan's podcast. He's got one of his own. It's called The Shotgun Start. Where can they find that at?
It's everywhere. I mean, Apple, Spotify, we try to release it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, although with COVID, like there's no more commutes. So usually it's out Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday night. You know, it's Apple, Spotify, all those places where you get podcasts. But right. Appreciate you having me on, Travis.
Yeah, you bet. Good stuff. I enjoyed the conversation. Have a great week and we'll do it again.